turned out to left pocket, searching for a comb automatic.
Good morning, Montreal. Welcome to the New Spins Library on CKUT 90.3 FM in Montreal. We used to be called the Wednesday Morning After. We have the same great lineup with lots of interviews that offer us a new spin on everything. Over the spring and summer, we will be making changes to the show. There will be a brand new intro theme, morning show ID, and station IDs. We will have a launch party on air as soon as we can. This morning, we will have a tight show for you in arts and culture, with two pre-recorded interviews from the arts and culture spot, and one from music. Our first guest is Khosro Barahmandi, artistic director of the Festival Accès Asie. He tells us all about the festival. The second interview is with Ishana, a musician. Ishana tells us about her history and new music. The final interview is with Simon Portugal from Fragile and Useless. Enjoy his interview coming up on the show. 8 o'clock brings news by Viewpoints. 8:15 brings weather. And after some music, we'll visit the podcast called In the Shower with Taz and Marcus, where this week's question is, why does where we come from affect how we look? After some more music, we'll wrap up the show. Let's start the day off with some music.
Century. candles and I called it a night, 'cause I've run out of time.
Festival Access Azi is gearing up to celebrate its 27th anniversary in style. After 2 years of hosting online performances, it's time to reunite with our audiences at Montreal venues to applaud our talented artists of Asian origin. Join us in May as we celebrate together Asian Heritage Month. To inaugurate this reunion, the festival is delighted to invite you to its opening cocktail on Thursday, May 5th at 5 p.m. at the splendid setting of the Conseil des Arts de Montréal. We are doing it big, red carpet, appetizers, cocktails, music, to celebrate with you and take a peek at what awaits us over the next 4 weeks from May 1st to 29th, 2022 in some of Montreal's exceptional venues. With us today, we have Khosro Barramandi. Hi, Khosro, and welcome to the show.
Hello, hi. Thank you for having invited me, Sheila.
First, please introduce yourself and tell us how you came to be involved in the Festival d'Access Azi.
Okay, my name is Khosro Barramandi, and I'm originally from Iran. I'm an artist, I'm a painter, and my involvement with the Festival Azi goes to the last century. That is 1997, I met director of the festival at that time, and we had a conversation about ourselves, who we are, what we do, and the conversation began about the Asia. And then, so I told my friend, Janet Lam, was the artistic director of the Festival XSE and the co-founder of the festival, that I was an Asian and that the Asia is a, you know, a very big continent, the biggest continent on the earth. And so it includes so many different countries, including, you know, all the countries on the Middle East and all that. So anyhow, the idea about what Asia is came from those days. And from that moment, Janet Lam was the artistic director, as I mentioned, wanted to have a more inclusive programming and include all the artists from the continent. So we began from Turkey, because half of the Turkey is on the continent of Asia and the other half is on Europe. But anyhow, through this conversation, the idea of creating the programming and presenting artists are on the core continent of the festival began. The festival was created in 1995 during the month of May. The month of May is considered Asian Heritage Month. This idea came from the United States. During the 70s, there was a festival, Asian Heritage Month Festival in New York, that stopped later. Janet Lam and other artists those days that created the festival, they on that month, which was already established as Asian Heritage Month, and then began it in Canada. We are the first art organization that presented the Asian Heritage Month here in Canada. And then following us, there were other cities. Now we have about 5-6 cities across the Canada that celebrates the month of May. One of the works that we did was to push to make the Asian Heritage Month more official through the government of Canada, the federal government, and through the help of a senator who originally she's from China, Senator Poi, who is not a senator anymore. She brought a motion to the parliament to declare the month of May as Asian Heritage Month. Following that, the city of Montreal did the same thing, and very recently, the province of Quebec and the government of Quebec as well, they adopted it, the month of May, as Asian Heritage Month. So, oh yes, that's the story. So when in that very first conversation that I had with Janet, and I mentioned that I'm a painter, so she wanted to come and see my work in my studio. And then following that, she invited me to participate in the exhibition of the year after, which was 1998. And then by those days, the festival was run by the volunteers. So everybody was a volunteer. And so Janet Lam asked me if I could volunteer and help to put up the exhibition together, which I accepted it. And then from that, for a couple of years, I continued to curate the visual arts exhibitions. And then later on, we received funding through the Canada Council, through which we could rent the office and then hire somebody. And then by then, the board of the Festival XAZ offered me the job to be the coordinator. And then later I became the general manager of the festival. And in 2012, Janet Lam left the festival, and then I was appointed as the artistic director of the festival. So,
that's who you are. You're the artistic director of the festival. So pleased to meet you.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you.
What is the history of the Festival d'XSAZI? Before you got involved and just after?
Yeah, the idea about a festival, in fact, was the need that not only Asian artists who came from elsewhere to Canada, they had major difficulties to present their work, and the visibility was a very big problem and still is. But those days was much more complex and more difficult, especially in Quebec and in Montreal, that there was already questions of identity and language that is very, very present. Having other artists from elsewhere coming into the city and talking about their art, their culture, their identity could bring more challenges. So the desire behind creating this platform on which the Asian artists could present their work came from that necessity to have a place for the artists to express themselves, to bring their arts into the public and talk about their art and their identity and present their communities. So the reason for which the Festival XAZI was created, in fact, was to create this platform and create these bridges between Asian communities and among Asian communities as well, because there were so many, as I mentioned, it's the largest continent and we have so many countries on Asia that these people among themselves, there was this need of solidarity to be together, to exchange and come together, existed as well. So it has a few reasons behind it, but the main reason is to celebrate the Asian Heritage Month, to celebrate the contribution of all different Asian communities who have lived here in Montreal, in Quebec, to celebrate their art and culture, and create dialogues between themselves and between them and other communities.
What's happening at the festival this year?
So this year, as you mentioned, after 2 years of doing online activities, we have a very large disciplinary program that we are presenting, which begins on the 5th of May and will continue until the 29th of May. As I said, it's multidisciplinary. 90% of presentation, even more, is contemporary expression. We have traditional art as well that we present. We have programs that include music, dance, contemporary dance. We have video projections, art, video art projections. We have multimedia. We have even a culinary art element in our program that this year we are presenting the Mongolian cuisine. We even have a Mongolian artist that is presenting the contemporary dance piece as well. So as I said, it's a multidisciplinary. We have the 17 events that we are presenting this year. We have events for the children as well. Two of our elements are online. The rest are all in presenting in person. We have a very detailed program on our website. So I think in order to go through that, it would take a lot of time. So I need to invite people to go on our website, which is www.axeazi.com, and find the program, the detailed program. And as you did it on our behalf, I do it again. I invite everybody to come to our opening capital, where we present our program and at the same time start the celebration of Asian Heritage Month.
Who are your guests at the festival and what does everyone do?
This year, our guests are artists coming from majorly they are coming from Montreal and Quebec, but we have artists that come from different parts of Canada, from Manitoba. We have artists from Vancouver, from Toronto. And internationally as well, we have guests. We have a guest who is coming from Japan, is the director of a film festival in Tokyo that we have developed a relationship with. We are doing the exchange program. Forum Image is the name of the festival in Tokyo. So the artistic director is coming to Montreal to present 5 short videos, art videos. And following that, next September, Festival XAZI will send its artists to Japan to show their work in Tokyo. So this is a very interesting program. It happens on the 6th of May at the Jesu. So I invite people to come, and the director will be present. He's arriving to Montreal next Wednesday. So he'll be both present at the opening night and also at the projection. The second group that we have invited to come to Canada is from Pakistan. It's a group that presents Qavwali music, which is the mystic music from Pakistan. It's a very beautiful group of 8 people who are coming. The concert is very, very energetic and very exciting. The concert will be presented at the auditorium of the Grand Bibliothèque. And that happens on the May 14th. Other than that, we also have a very festive night where we invite people to come and celebrate the month of May at this free center with 2 DJs. We have, as I mentioned, the 2 series of contemporary dance. We have multidisciplinary piece that called Pange, which speaks in that piece specifically would be only in English. It presents the personal story of the artist he met, who will tell his story, but within the context of the history of India under the post-colonization period, which is very interesting and touching. That happens the 19th and 20th of May at the venue, which is called Mai Memorial Interculturel. We have contemporary music, we have 2 visual arts exhibitions, and we have 2 theater readings. The theater readings as well are only English. It's called Fireworks Play Readings. That happens on the May 13th. So I invite you to check our website to get more details about the venues, the practice. Some of our events are for free. Some of them are ticketed. So by going on our website, you will have all the information.
When and where will the opening cocktail take place? And yes, how do our listeners register for the free events and the costing events?
The opening is at the Conseil des Arts de Montréal, which is on Sherbrooke Street. It happens on the 5th of May, next Thursday, and begins around 5 o'clock in the evening and goes on till 7:30-ish. Evening, we will be presenting our program. And at the same time, we have guests that will be addressing the public to celebrate the Asian Heritage Month. We have artists as well that will be during the evening. To sign up, people can either go through our site or through Facebook pages. We have our events as well presented on the social media, on Instagram and on website. You can just tap Axe-Azi either on the Google or on the Facebook. You get all the information, very, very detailed information that we have prepared. So very easy to access all those information online.
What is the list of programs during the month of May, and who are the artists?
All right, so for this year, we have 17 events, and we are presenting, I believe, something about 40 or 50 artists. We are going to them by one. Well, one of the reasons behind the festival, going through the 27 years of life, we noticed that we have a second generation of artists that are, you know, coming on the stage in the cultural milieu in Montreal. So this year program was really to concentrate on young artists and bring them on the stage. For example, we have a very wonderful artist that originally she's from Japan and she lives in Montreal, and she's a violinist.
What's her name? Mana Shirayashi.
She's a violinist that will be presenting her work.
Beautiful name.
Yes. And she's plays classical violin and contemporary, presenting her at the Jeunesse Musicale on the 12th of May. Another very young upcoming artist originally from, her name is Lina Shui. She's an artist, and we are presenting her on the 14th Obro. We are also, as I mentioned, international artists, but the artists from Montreal have our contemporary dance. We have two contemporary dance. One of them is presented by Claudia Shantek, who is originally from China. She lives in Montreal, but growing up in Madagascar. And also Michel Gambol, fantastic dancer and choreographer, originally from Mongolia, and Claudia Shantak from China. As I said about the program that is called Panj, multidisciplinary Panj, is presented by Himat Sinha, who is a multidisciplinary artist from Punjab, but lives in Montreal. He's a Montrealer, and he's been around with the festival for many, many years. And very, very interesting story, personal, but very much related to the history of India. We have also outdoor event, which is very interesting. I'd like to invite people to come that, because we are presenting a Bollywood dance program, but at the same time, a workshop.
We are
teaching people to
dance. The whole Bollywood scene. Oh, that should be fun. Yeah, what day is that? Where is that happening?
That's on the Sunday 29th of the festival, and it's presented by Amrita Shudari, who is a fantastic trial. She both does classical dance and Bollywood dance. So she's offering the workshop. As I said, it's an outdoor event. It's an afternoon of Sunday, May 12th.
What's her name again? Amrita?
Her name is Amrita.
Amrita, go girl, yeah. Go.
Yes.
What's going to be happening next year as Festival d'Axe as he moves forward?
As you might know, programming in Montreal, because of all the, you know, in some way, Montreal is the cultural capital of Canada, and we usually program our festival about a year and a half in advance. So program for 2023 has been already done. We are very happy because next year we have a very important national element in our program that is based on a call for submission, presenting the contemporary dancers across the Canada. So we have the national jury, and we are collaborating Canadian Dance, which is an art organization based in Toronto, and Tangente, which is a venue, Montreal and Festival XRZ together. We are putting up call for submission. The process of through the applications will happen this summer. We will choose the artists and present them next year, but that presentation would be a true national tour. So within three different cities will be happening. We also have, again, we have visual arts. We have, again, international artists are coming from India next year. We have contemporary dance. us, the music. We have very beautiful program arts. We haven't decided exactly what to do with our culinary art. I'm thinking of more of Vietnamese cuisine, to present Vietnamese cuisine. But it's again, is a multidisciplinary and happens during the month of May, 4 weeks. Usually our program begins on each Thursday and finishes on the Sunday of the same week. So we have 4 days of activities. Sometimes we have double same nights, as in, for example, this week as well. The 14th, we have 2-3 events happening at the same day. It's again a program that presents both the new generation, upcoming young generation, and also the established artists.
If our listeners want more information, where should they go?
I invite people to go on our website. Our website is very detailed. Our website as well is not only program, it's about the history of the festival, XAZ, is about our mandate, is about our vision, is about our history. It tells the all we have gone through to all these last 27 years. So it's a very resourced website for people who want to learn more about Asian Heritage Month, what it means, what it has come from. All that information is available on our website as well. Besides, you get to learn about our program, the details of the program, the venues, those ones who are free, those ones who are ticketed, and then where to buy the tickets. All the information are available on the website. We also have this year, I mean, as every year, we do have messages that the different politicians, from Justin Trudeau to Minister of Patrimoine Canada, and then the city of Montreal, the mayor of the city, and so there are all these messages also available on our website to read and learn about more about Asian Heritage Month.
Thank you for your interview today.
You're welcome. I wish everybody a happy Asian Heritage Month and invite you to come and celebrate the month of May with us this coming May.
You've been listening to Khosrow Barahmandi speaking about this year's Festival d'XAZ. I am your host, Sheila Ferrando.
이 사람들은 갖고 있어 저마다의 생각 맞지 않다 생각하면 포근하지 댓글라들이 아빠는 내가 잘 하고 있을까가 궁금해 내 이름 쳤지만 내 이미지는 그냥 신의 최약자 난 그냥 방구석에서 팔 수 있는 작업물들에 무료 공개하는 걸 누군가 듣고 아플 때에 남긴다는 게 아니면 현금도 없이 내가 증을 사는 게 너무나 아프면서 그 와중에 신기해 감정이란 건 환율 계산할 필요가 없어 이 시세는 유명세로 쳐 그럼 난 작업실에 가야겠어 지출 없이 재산을 만들기 위해서
Ishana is a relatively new roots folk singer-songwriter based in Montreal, but she's also an empathetic musician. Her songs feel like soothing musical therapy sessions when she conveys a wide array of emotions and harnesses their power through song. With us today, we have Ishana. Hi, Ishana, and welcome to the show.
Hi, Sheila. How are you?
First, please introduce yourself and tell us your history as a musician.
My name is Ishana. I've been singing for as long as I can remember since I was a kid. I still remember the first song I ever sang when I was like running around the playground. But I've been performing really around Montreal since about 2013. Usually I've played with bands here and there, but usually it's solo. Me and my guitar, sometimes a piano, but guitar mostly. And lately I've been trying to, I've taken a little pause in the last, well, during the pandemic, and I've been really taking my time to get back into it. So I haven't done any shows since because I've kind of felt like in the past I was categorized as a folk artist because I was just singing my slower songs with an acoustic guitar, and that's how they came out. But that's not how I actually pictured myself as an artist, and that's not how I pictured the songs to be. And I actually hear full productions in my head when I'm singing them. So I got into producing over the last couple of years. Still learning, but I would like to, and I've started the last shows that I have done, I've been playing more with my computer, my laptop, and my productions backing me up as I play the guitar still. Yeah, I think that sums it up.
What is your formal training and education, and why did you decide to make music your career?
Formal training and education is, I actually grew up with very minimal music education up until maybe 13, 14 years old. Took some private lessons for guitar. And I didn't want to take singing lessons right away. I had a few cliches in mind about being a singer, and I heard horror stories about singing lessons. So I kind of avoided it for a long time. So I just stuck with guitar. And then I did clarinet in school, very simple clarinet stuff for the band at school. And then I did a deck in classical guitar. So my CJEP in classical guitar at Saint-Laurent. And I learned a lot of skills that helped me have more confidence for when I'm songwriting or performing my guitar. But yeah, and then I went to Université de Montréal in musicology, but I dropped out halfway through actually. So, yeah. Why did I decide to make music my career? It's just, I always liked music. I always wanted to be a singer. Yeah, I don't know. It's just like a feeling. And I've tried to escape it a few times actually when I was in lower points, and like within a day someone would come up to me like, when's your album coming out, or how's the music going, keep on doing your thing. So I was just like, okay, I just have to keep doing it, and it follows me, so I'm following it too.
Who are your performance partners, and what does everyone play or do?
So yeah, I usually perform alone. Sometimes I perform with a band, and if that's the case, I'll be singing and playing guitar usually. And then someone else might be playing a second guitar, just like friends here and there, nothing. I have no official band right now. But yeah, usually, or like a bass or something. But usually I perform alone. If I work with people, it's more like in producing music, finalizing things with mixing or adding extra instruments or, yeah, but I usually play alone.
Where did you come from, and how does this influence your music?
So I am born in Mississauga, Ontario, but I actually grew up in Montreal. But I do have this weird, like ethnical mix. So my mom's Chinese, my biological dad's from Bangladesh, but I didn't grow up with him. I grew up with stepdad, who played a lot of like Motown and rock and roll in the house when I was growing up. So I think that actually influenced me a lot more than my ethnical roots. And then my mom, she played a lot of like Shania Twain and country music. I feel very influenced by like what she was playing in the late 90s when I started kind of understanding what music was a little better and singing along to songs. So yeah, I feel mostly influenced by what my mom and my stepdad were listening to growing up. But I also felt a big aversion to a lot of it. Especially it's very great music, but just because it was playing constantly, I think I kind of got tired of hearing rock and roll and Motown especially. And then I started listening to a lot of pop music from the early 2000s, or like punk, pop, rock kind of music, like Avril Lavigne. And I started getting into bands like Billy Talent and 3 Days Grace, and was a little emo kid in elementary school. Yeah, I think I was influenced by my mom and my stepdad were listening to. in liking it and then in finding the opposite of that as well. And then the Montreal music scene has a lot of jazz and of soul and R&B. So I think it affected me anyway. Like sometimes I'll be trying to write like a song that sounds a little more aggressive and people will be like, oh, it's so soothing. And then if I collaborate with someone, it'll sound like a funk song or like a, this is like unreleased stuff that I'm talking about, or it'll sound a little more jazzy if I'm playing with other musicians who are very influenced by that. So I think that's how my surroundings and my upbringing kind of influenced my music.
May we hear some of your music?
Of course, yeah.
This is Hole Again on the New Spins Library.
Thank you. us whole again.
When are you planning to release your next LP, and what can we expect of your efforts?
So when I'm planning to release my next LP, I am always planning to release an LP. I find it actually very unpredictable. And because of just like mundane things like finances, I find it hard to, or like technological skills, producing skills, I find it hard to plan when I'm going to do the next LP. Maybe that's just me. But yeah, so I find it kind of unpredictable. So I kind of go with the flow, and I am aiming for an EP towards the end of this year, early next year. So end of 2022, early 2023. We'll see how that goes. I do have a lot of songs in my computer that I want to share as soon as possible. I have collaborations like flying around, coming in and out. So yeah, I'm working on some stuff right now and hoping for end of 2022 and early 2023, but you'll likely hear something before that as well. What people can expect is more upbeat dance music. So far it's been very like sad songs and melancholic songs. Now they're going to be a little bit more fun.
Do you have any upcoming concerts?
I do. I have May 30th, I'll be playing at Bar de Courcelles in St. Henry. And then on June 24th, I'll be playing at the Wheel Club in NDG with the Pivot Tone. They're this like bebop, doo-wop punk band, which I find is an interesting mix. And we've collaborated before on some stuff that's also unreleased right now. Hopefully it'll be released later this year. So with the Pivot Tones and Summer Led and Coolman Logan, I haven't actually heard of those artists before, but I'm excited to discover them. And then in the summertime, I'll be playing at L'Orbit at some point. I don't know the date yet, though.
May we listen to some more of your music from the past?
Yeah, of course.
This is Steady Eyes on CKUT. If our listeners want more information or to buy your music or event tickets, where should they go?
They should just follow me on my social media. Everything's there. If there's any new shows popping up, the announcements will be there. I also have a Bandcamp. Right now, my two previous projects are there. And I will add Hole again. So if you want to support with that as well, you can do that on Bandcamp.
Well, thank you for your interview today.
Yeah, thank you, Sheila. Thank you for having me.
You've been listening to Ishana speaking about her music. I am your host, Sheila Ferrando.
To stream or not to stream, that is the question. From platforming hate speech to unbelievably low royalty rates for artists, how can we as music fans ethically consume music online? Yes, radio stations such as CJLO are indeed an ethical source for music consumption, but what are the larger forces at play? What role do major labels have in this current climate? And what realistically can listeners do to ensure that the musicians they love can sustain long and meaningful careers? To find out, please join CJLO 1690 AM, CKUT 90.3 FM, and various members of the Canadian music industry for a wide-ranging and important conversation regarding the ethics of streaming on Thursday, April 14th at 12 p.m. Eastern. For more details on how to attend, follow us on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram at CJLO 1690 AM.
Simon Portugal will collaborate from May 9th to May 15th with five Montreal artists for an experiment with choreography as a simple social algorithm. With us today, we have Simon Portugal. Hi, Simon, and welcome to the show.
Hi, Sheila, how are you doing?
First, please introduce yourself and tell us how you came to be involved with La Chapelle Theatre.
So my name is Simon Portugal. I am a dancer and choreographer based in Montreal. I made a solo work a couple years before. That sort of ended in 2019, and the director of the theater, Olivier Bertrand, came to see this one. Over the years, I've gone to La Chapelle for years and wanted to be able to perform there. So I had a meeting with him, and here we are.
That's what we call making dreams come true.
Yeah.
What do you call your dance presentation, and who will be participating in it?
So I call this work Fragile and Useless. There are three dancers and how many others? One, two, three, four other collaborators with us. A lighting designer, a digital animator, an outside eye, so somebody who gives me feedback, and then a costume designer. The dancers are Justin DeLuna, Louise Michelle Jackson, and Emile Pinot. The lighting designer, who is also a performer and choreographer, her name is Niansu Wang. The animator's name is Timothy Thomason. The outside eye is Sasha Kleinplatz, and the costume designer is Elliot Elliott.
What is your performance history or educational history, and what is that of the participants?
I moved to Montreal in 2005 to attend the Contemporary Dance School here, or one of them. At the time it was called LADMI, now it's L'École de Danse Contemporaine de Montréal. In 2008, I had to audition, but I studied again for another 3 years in Brussels at a school called Parts. After that, I moved back to Montreal and quickly moved to Toronto, where I worked with a dance company called Dancemakers for about 3 years. And then in 2015, I moved back to Montreal to start doing my own work. So Justin, I believe he trained at Ryerson and moved to Montreal like 4 or 5 years ago. And he's been working with a bunch of people here since then. He's great. Louise Michelle, I trained in ballet for years, but quickly, moved on to contemporary work. Who she performed with? Dana Gingra here in the city, a Belgian choreographer named Sidi Larbi Cherkaoui. And now she also does her own work. Emil also makes his own work. He initially trained in circus, actually, but moved to choreography some years ago. Niansu, like I mentioned, is a choreographer and performer, but has also since university been developing like a lighting practice. And it's only over the last year or so that she's been making a foray into actually doing that work for other dance artists also. She's quite busy. It's quite amazing to watch. Timothy Thomason is finishing his master's at Concordia in computation arts. Sasha is well known and loved by the community. She is a part of Wants and Needs Dance. They put on events like, like Short and Sweet, Piss in the Pool. She makes her own choreography and also is a teacher now at Concordia. Elliot, our costume designer, I've just met actually recently. I don't actually know much about them. It's been a rush to get this work going somehow, but working with them is great at this point. That's what I know. That's what I know about Elliot.
What happens during the performance?
Yes. So what happens during the performance? I mean, I guess what I was going to say about the performance is it had initially started with this first question of what would a folk dance look like today if it was somewhat disconnected from, I guess, more artifactual practices. I don't know, I think about forms like Ukrainian folk dancing, which they're not, I mean, they're still practiced today, they still develop with over time, but they're more connected to a past or a history. And my question about this dance was sort of, what if disconnected from history a little bit, what would a folk dance look like today? I'm sort of connecting that to what I think of as the era of hyper-digitization and the internet, sort of mass production, capitalism, and that's sort of what we're working out. We're not finished the dance yet, but what's showing up in this studio this past couple of weeks, we're going into the theater next week for a tech residency, but what's been showing up is sort of themes of looking at dance as a very, maybe sort of undervalued form of labor. And so, there's sort of some connection between dance and labor, but also in sociality and how much it takes to sort of work together as more than one person. I would say there's sort of a taste of or a cross somehow between a future vibe with nostalgia, a futuristic nostalgia sort of situation. Maybe that's, this question of what a folk dance might be today.
What is the name of the piece currently?
Fragile and Useless.
If you could perform this piece anywhere, where would you dance this dance?
There's no specific place. I've been thinking what this piece might look like on film, if that's a place somehow.
That's a place.
Yeah. That's been my curiosity, how this would show up on film. Also as a way for, I've been thinking about how dance could maybe tour more or travel more easily.
Where will performance of this piece of theater take you in the future?
I'm unsure for now. We'll see in the future. But I know that what it has brought up for me is an interest in making more group work. So hopefully, on to more work like this.
If our listeners want more information or to buy tickets to the show, where should they go?
So to buy tickets to the show, you can go to lachapelle.org. That's lachapelle.org. Or you can call this number, 514-843-7738, and that'll take you to the LaChapelle ticket office.
Thank you for your interview today.
Thank you, Sheila.
You've been listening to Simon Portugal speaking about his dance presentation, Fragile and Useless. I am your host, Sheila Ferrando.
Hello and welcome to Viewpoints. My name is Boris Hassine. I'll be with you for the next half hour. On today's Viewpoints, the Western Literacy Council has a new executive director, Craig Graham, just loves his new job.
If you're lacking in literacy skills, that can hold you back. So sometimes we're the first door that people go to. We're just about opening doors and allowing people to participate more in society.
The small Cortes Island Market celebrates its 30 years on the island. Keeping customers happy seems to be the best recipe.
I just love everything about the job. I love serving people. I love making people happy. And I love the gratitude that's shown to me by doing this for other people. Like, my motto is to do something special for one person every day.
We stay on Cortes, where Hugh Barton believes he has the largest native Western yew on the island. He explains how he found the tree.
I said, oh, we're buying this property. Oh, cool. You know, so we all shake hands and cool, because you have to see this yew tree. Look what you, it's on your property. So then I discovered this and I went, wow, there's not very many that are that big.
And in Quebec, the Pontiac region is doing more to attract the healthcare workers it lost.
Please come back. We need you now more than ever. We want you, we need you, we value you, and we respect you.
This and more on Viewpoints.
Follow us on Twitter at CanadaLJI. Listen to all our news online at canada-info.ca.
The Western Quebec Literacy Council has a new executive director. Greg Graham will handle the day-to-day operations of the council.